The Florida community of mindfulness is happy to make these talks available to you. If you find this talk to be a benefit, please consider making a donation to support us. You'll find a donation button on the talks section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. Thank you, and may you be happy and free of suffering.
One of the things about this kind of mindfulness meditation where you're not putting anything into your mind, you're not visualizing something, or you're not chanting a mantra, or you're not reflecting or thinking about some subject matter, is it's kind of very naked. It's like it's just us and our minds and bodies. And for many of us, that's not a happy experience when it begins. But that's good. Because if we're really serious about wanting to heal and transform, we have to know what it is that we have to heal and transform. And for many of us, we'd rather not know that. We'd rather get on with that, you know. But unfortunately, the only way we'll get to that is with this vehicle that we already have, this mind of ours, with all its thoughts and perceptions and ideas and emotions and memories. I mean, this is the ground in which we begin. And so mindfulness is beginning to turn on the light to see what's really going on within us, right? And if you sit long enough in this kind of meditation, you will no longer be fooled by who you think you are. You will begin to know who you are. But fortunately, this is a wonderful path with many skillful means and practical ways that the path of transformation is open to all of us. But unfortunately, we have to begin where we're at, so to speak. We can't begin where we'd like to be or think we should be. So please, for those who are new to meditation, don't be discouraged. We all begin in kindergarten, so to speak. And kindergarten for kindergartens is quite enjoyable. So, if you find yourself in kindergarten, please enjoy it. Enjoy being a beginner. Enjoy not knowing anything. So, over these past 2 weeks, Diane has been talking about these three doors of liberation, these three gates to emancipation. They're translated in many different ways. And I wanted to complete that today because she talked about the second two, signlessness and aimlessness. And for those of you, again, who are fairly new to Buddhism or Dharma, this is sort of the deeper end of the pool, so to speak, in terms of Buddhist teachings, but I'll do my best to kind of make them very understandable for you. Now, what Diane left out was the first one, which was emptiness. And I really think we have to begin with this idea, this doctrine, this teaching, this realization of emptiness, which is very, very fundamental to Buddhism because it's fundamental to the Buddha's own enlightenment 2,600 years ago, his own realization about life. And so with understanding of emptiness as the ground, the basis, then we can understand that the path is about signlessness. And then we can understand that the fruition is this state of wishlessness, which I'll talk about in a moment. So Diane, I think, shied away from emptiness, did the other two. Because emptiness can be a little intimidating. Not that it's not easy to understand, but it is something, especially for Americans, Westerners, is very hard for us to understand. Even though it's very interesting these days for those of you who follow science, science is endlessly confirming these days the emptiness of all phenomena. So, there was a sutra called the Sutra of the Questions of Brahma. Sutras are purported teachings of the Buddha. And in that sutra, the Questions of Brahma, it is said, all phenomena have the nature of emptiness beyond conceptual reference. All phenomena have the nature of characterlessness or signlessness beyond conceptual thought. All phenomena have the nature of wishlessness beyond acceptance and rejection. So these three very simple statements, teachings, are the doors of liberation, the doors of freedom, the doors of emancipation. Because if we go through them, we will enter greater freedom. Now, what does freedom mean? In our culture, freedom means the freedom to what? To buy any cereal I want, right? It's most of our freedom is often defined as a consumer freedom, or we often define our freedom. We were a free country. We can say what we like. We can vote in privacy, right? It's a hidden ballot. So we define freedom in this more social way, right? That's our freedom. But Buddhism, like other traditions, when they talk about freedom, emancipation, liberation, they talk about it in terms of liberation from suffering. Freedom from suffering. Freedom from delusion. Right? So it's a very different kind of freedom that is offered to us, but it's very personal. Right? Because for these other kinds of freedoms, liberations, emancipations, we have to go out and do something. We have to go shopping to exercise our freedom to consume what we want. You know, we go to Walmart and we exercise our freedom. Or we can choose anything we want. We go on the internet, we can buy whatever we want. You know what I mean? That's our freedom. Or we can, you know, we can vote. Or we can, you know, there's lots of freedoms. Or we can speak our mind. So it's sort of like we have to go do something to exercise that kind of social freedom. But the liberation from suffering, the liberation from ignorance, the liberation from our own delusions, our own stuff, which many of us want, is a liberation that does not have to wait until we go do something. It is something that occurs within us and it can occur wherever and whenever. So it's this idea of liberation is very profound. And for many of us Americans, it's very new. Right, we've heard about liberation, freedom, liberation movements, freedoms, this and that. But this idea of being free from suffering, free from delusions, free from the constrictions of self-centeredness is new for us. Now, so the Buddha says all phenomena have the nature of emptiness. Now, phenomena means is the thing. So actually, all we're doing right now is experiencing phenomena, right? Like I'm a phenomena, you're a phenomena, you're a phenomena to my eyes, I'm a phenomena to your eyes, my words are a phenomena to your ears, right? So anything that our senses see, hear, smell, touch, you know, etc., or any or our thoughts are mental phenomena. Right? There are things that our mind's aware of. So phenomena in Buddhism, it means everything, physical or mental. So it's very big and it includes everything. There is nothing you can think of which is not about a phenomena. Is that clear? It's kind of simple. It's not like deep philosophical stuff. It's like everything. It's like a thing. Everything. All those things we call phenomena. Now, it's very important what he says next, because see, this is profound. You don't have to go, well, how about this and how about that? I mean, how about flowers and how about tea and how about cups and how about people and how about memories and how about, you know, you see? It's like, oh, that's all phenomena. Okay? Is that clear? So this includes everything. And then he says, all phenomena have the nature of emptiness. In Sanskrit, the original, it's called shunyata. Now, the problem with emptiness is, again, I think, I don't know about you, but for most of us in our English, when we hear the word emptiness, we think of like empty space, right? You know, something's empty. But this is not what it means. This is important. So when the Buddha talks about emptiness, he means it is empty of permanent selfhood. It is empty of that. Okay? It is, there's nothing solid in anything. Everything is empty of solidity and permanence and sort of identity and selfhood. Okay, we're just going to take this step by step. All right, so understand that that's what it means. It doesn't mean like everything is empty space. It means everything is empty of any kind of permanence and solidity. This is profound. Right? Because if you really thought that things were solid and permanent, well, how did we grow from being a baby? Right? See, somehow that little form of a baby was not a permanent, solid thing. So therefore, it could what? It could grow and change. See, we've all done that. See, nobody's shown up here in their diapers today. Right? Nobody's been brought by their mommy and daddy. Why? Because that baby that appears as a solid thing is not a solid thing. It's made up of lots of parts. Right? Hundreds of thousands of millions of parts, physical parts, right? That are constantly changing. Right? Changing according to causes and conditions. Now, we call this a meditation hall, don't we? Right? I'm just talking. See? Now, please understand that when I'm talking in this way, Buddhism, we talk about how things appear and how things really are, right? So when we look at a child or we look at each other, how do we appear? Solid, permanent, always going to be here. That's how things appear, isn't it? You don't look at me and realize that I am in the process of deteriorating. You can't see me like that, right? I can't see you like that. With my eyes, I see you as how you are. But we all know that how we are, even physically today, is not how we're going to be tomorrow. We may be healthy today, we may be sick tomorrow. We may like the way we look today, we may not like the way we look tomorrow. Right? So the way things appear are not as they are. Right? Now, we call this what? A meditation hall. But is there really some solid, permanent thing here called a meditation hall? I mean, we don't call do we call the wall the meditation hall? No, we call it the wall. Do we call the ceiling the meditation hall? No, we call it the ceiling, right? Do we call the floor the meditation hall? No, we call it the floor. Do we call the cushions the meditation hall, the chairs? No. Right? So this thing that we call a meditation hall is just made up of parts. Right? And you can't find anything called a meditation hall in all those parts. But when you put all those parts together, what do you get? Something that's called a meditation hall. But there's really no solid permanent thing called a meditation hall. Actually, this hall used to be a church. And there were pews here. So we kind of move things around. Now it's a Buddhist meditation hall. Right? Why is that? Because everything is empty of solidity and permanence. Everything is just made up of parts. And those parts are constantly in motion, constantly changing, constantly impermanent. Right? And again, we know that science confirms this. Right? Everything appears solid, right? And yet we know what? That all the parts that we're made up of, that everything is made up, is actually what? Now, I know nothing about science, so this is probably a 40-year-old, high school science. I'm sure it's a lot more sophisticated. But, I mean, it's a little embarrassing. I'm going to start talking about things like atoms. Do people talk about atoms anymore? But, they're like these atoms, right? It's all, right? It's all empty. There's nothing solid here, is there? It's just energy, these atoms just moving around, and right, and they're atoms and this is atoms. We're all just, right? With these kind of energy. That's all we are. And yet we look very what? Solid and permanent. And yet that is, it appears that way, but that's not really the way it is. And everything is like that. Again, we call this, and I'm not going to hurt the flower, but we call this a flower. That's what we name it. It looks like, but if you took all the petals and you threw them down, and you took all the leaves and you threw them down, if you looked at that, would you call that a flower? No. Well, what happened to the flower? It never existed in any real way. It was just parts coming together for causes and conditions, momentarily showed up this way, and we called it a flower. But there's no real thing called a flower in any permanent, inherent way. Yes, in the moment, it appears like this. Yes, we call it a flower, right? But yet, if we took this flower apart, looking for that essential flower part that never dies, that's always here, are we going to find it? No. Because it is empty of any permanent solid thing that's a flower. It's just made up of parts. All the parts are made up of parts, and the parts are made up of parts and parts and parts down to atoms and energy and, right? And that same energy and atoms make human beings, they make buildings, they make planets, right? They make animals. It can go any direction according to causes and conditions. Now, understanding the empty nature of phenomena of the external world is interesting. It can help us accept why the world is constantly in motion and never staying the same, and so easily, you know, changing this way and that way. Why there doesn't seem to be any stability, any kind of permanent solidity in the world at all. And many people are disturbed by that, frightened by that, upset by that. But that's just the way it is. Right? So this teaching of emptiness, going back to the Buddha, is not philosophy, it's not theology. It's something that came from him looking deeply into the nature of reality, the same way a scientist does. We might say it's a fact of reality. Okay, so that's the emptiness of phenomena. Now, which again has lots of, this is sort of an introductory talk today, because I know the kids are coming in a little later. Now, in the teachings on emptiness, we talk about the twofold emptiness. One is the emptiness of things, and one is the emptiness of self. And this is where it gets important. Because everybody sitting in this room, unless you've been practicing for a long time, believe you're a self. Right? Is that true? You believe what? I'm looking back, Charlie believes he's Charlie. Right? Brian, he, oh, two Brians in a row, they believe they're Brian. Right? People back there, there's another Brian back there, right? He believes he's a Brian. Right? I'm a Brian. That's who am I? I'm Brian. What's this? This is Brian's body, right? And Brian, I have thoughts. These are my thoughts. I have a past. These are my past. I have issues. These are my issues, right? I have goals. I have this, right? Everything is based on what? Think about your life. Think about your issues. Think about your problems. Think it's all based on this fundamental belief that there's a permanent me existing here. Right? That this subjective sense we have of this, we call me. I. In this case, Fred. Right? And I am a solid, permanent thing that exists over time and space. Is this, just nod your head if you're somewhat with me. Can you see? And this belief in our permanent solidity is problematic. and our belief in the solidity and permanence of all those around us is problematic. Because when you see the world in this very one-dimensional way, in this permanent, unchanging way, when there's no insight into the nature of things or people, myself, then I am always, always, always in great emotionality about what's unfolding. Right? When things aren't unfolding the way we want, how are we? Anxious, worried, scared, resentful, angry, bitter, sad, lonely, hurt. When things are unfolding the way we want and people are, right? It's the opposite. There are all kind of positive emotions, but we're always tossed about by emotionality, tossed about by our thoughts. Our thoughts about what? About life that we think is permanent, solid, real, right? Many people are disturbed that, you know, the planet, life on the planet is changing. You know, hurricanes are getting more intense, storms are getting more intense, the seas are rising, more fires, more deadly, right? And many people are upset by that. Why? Why are they upset? Because they believe that somehow things shouldn't change. But things do change. Why? Because everything is empty of any solidity and permanence. Right? And the winds of causes and conditions just blow through life. They blow through ourself, they blow through others, and they blow through the planet, they blow through, you know. And that is just the nature of the way things are. So this doctrine of emptiness of the emptiness of a self is very revolutionary. It's very liberating because it is our identity of who I am or who I think I am. You know, nobody does this to me. Nobody talks to me that way, right? I can't believe. You know what I mean? It's like, what's that all about? It's about me. Now, why is the me getting so upset? Because I believe I'm a real solid thing. Please, everybody, just for a moment, close your eyes. And really get very strong into your me-ness, your I-ness. Okay, think about some drama, right? Where you got angry, you got upset, you got, right, resentful, you know, or you really wanted something. I want this, I need this, I must have that. I'm disappointed. You know, find some of your recent dramas that really are really strong with the I and the me and the mind. Somebody's trying to get something from me. Somebody's messing with my stuff, right? Kind of get into the strong I, me, my. Or you can use your own name, right? I mean, because usually everybody here has a name. You might be surprised to find out that you didn't choose that name. Somebody gave you that name. It's really not your name. Okay, so let the sense of I be strong. Okay. You know, and again, everybody in here, you know, I'm proud of myself. I like the way I look. I. You know, you look in the mirror, there's me. I like the way I look. I don't like the way I look. Okay. Now, kind of separate the sense of I, of me, of your self-identity from whatever is bothering it, and just look within your body mind. Because if there really is an I, me, mine, if there really is a self, if there really is a Fred that really exists in any kind of solid, permanent way, it has to exist somewhere. Right? And since I think most of you would believe that if you have whoever you think you are, if he or she exists somewhere, you probably don't believe he or she exists outside you floating around in space. You probably believe he or she exists in your own body mind. So just take a moment to look right now with your eyes closed into your own body mind and see if you can find yourself. This solid, permanent me that exists over time. Not thoughts, not feelings, not perceptions, not ideas, not all these things that you know from meditation just come and go, come and go, come and go, come and go. Not sensations, but this permanent self that says all this is happening to me. Like you might say, this is my body, right? We like to say that. Well, who is the I who owns the body? Can you find him or her? Look around. You know, if you're in your body, look, you know. Look, you know, don't forget to look in your elbow. Don't forget to look behind your stomach, you know. Just, you know, look everywhere in your body. Or if you're looking for yourself in your mind, you know, keep, you know, look among all your thoughts and all your feelings and all your ideas. You know, I believe in this and I don't believe in that. I. Now we're not getting into the ideas. We're getting into the self, the subjective sense of me. Can you find him or her? Can you find a little person who looks just like you inside yourself? Right? Please look. There may be somebody in there. Okay? Can you find a central control room where he or she is kind of, you know, it's got all the screens, you know, like checking everything, tied into all the senses, right? See what you can find. Can you find him or her? A permanent, solid self. We talk my mind, my body, my life, my possessions. Now again, we don't deny that it appears that way. And we don't deny that we have responsibility for our life. But the strong sense of self, does it exist? Or really, in fundamental ways, the same way our body is made up of parts, our mind is made up of parts, but can you find any central controller? Not make up a concept about that, but actually find it. I mean, it has to be real. We can't call an hallucination real. We can't call something imaginary real. So this is just, open your eyes. So this is just a little sense of how we work. The same way in the external world we take apart flowers and see that flowers are made of parts. Thich Nhat Hanh often talks about, you know, we look up at clouds and we see they're permanent things, but clouds are just made up of moisture. And where does the moisture come from? The moisture comes from the earth that is evaporates. And you know, where does that moisture that comes? Well, it comes from rain, which came from the cloud. And right, and we look at nature and we see these solid objects, and yet, you know, these trees that we look at and see don't exist separate from the earth, the ground. They have no existence separate from the rain and the water, which has no separate existence from the clouds. So therefore, the Buddhist universe is one where things are very open and interpenetrating and interconnected. Oftentimes, many people in our culture, we feel very disconnected. We feel very separate. We feel very alone, right? Lots of people feel this way all the time, some of the time. But why is that? Because we identify with a separate self, me, that's separate from everything, that somehow exists unto itself. I mean, I have no existence without who? My parents. I mean, I just didn't spring out of nowhere. I have no existence without my parents, who had no existence without their parents, and their parents, and their parents, and their parents, as well as this whole life of mine has been nurtured by so many causes and conditions. All the food I've eaten, right? Where did all the food come from? It came from the earth. Earth all over the place, right? So I'm all the vegetables, and I'm all the fruit, and I'm all the things I've eaten, and I'm all the interactions that I've had in life, right? And all the experiences I've had. I mean, I'm just using me as an example. So all we are is just something that's just made up of so many myriad of parts. Our mind is made up of so many thoughts and feelings and perceptions and memories. And that's very, can be unsettling for some people. For some people, it could be very liberating to know, oh, I'm not this puny little self that I have to spend my whole life defending and advancing and always worried about. Right? That I'm much bigger than that. I'm much more connected than that. So again, this teaching of the empty nature of phenomena is very profound and very liberating. It is one of the doors that we enter freedom when we know this, not only intellectually, but experientially by meditating on it. We liberate ourselves from this constriction of self and permanence and solidity, which is the basis, really, of all our personal suffering. We think thoughts are permanent. We think our feeling states are permanent, right? Why? Feelings and thoughts are impermanent. They have no substance, right? Just look at a thought. Just close your eyes for 1 second, okay? Bring up a thought and look right at it. Any kind of thought you want. When you look at a thought, what do you see? Is it a solid, permanent thing? Just look at your thoughts. Good thoughts, bad thoughts, happy thoughts, unhappy thoughts. Just look directly at a thought. Is it a solid, permanent thing? What happens when you look right at it? What happens when you look right at it? Does it stay there, looking right back at you? No. It disappears. You can't grasp it. Why is that? Because its nature is empty. There's nothing solid there. It just appears, one after the other. Things appear in our mind. It's all that's going on. But if we think our thoughts are real and solid, if we think our feeling states are real and solid, if we think our memories are real, solid things, then what? We have a lot of work to do. So seeing into the empty nature of our mind is very helpful, very liberating. It helps us get unstuck. Are we clear? I mean, these are, yeah, thank you. So all I'm doing today is identifying the door of emptiness, that leads to liberation, you know, through years of, I don't make it too difficult. It really doesn't take that much. The perfection takes much. But to really, enter the door is through study and practice. That's practice. We enter the door of emptiness, which liberates us. Now, so this is the ground. This is like the, because it's all phenomena. Now, the second thing says, all phenomena have the nature of characterlessness beyond conceptual thought. The other translation is signlessness. So if you think about phenomena, right, which means everything, we put a sign on everything. I hold this up, immediately you go, what? Flower, right? Like a barbershop or something. It's got a little sign. It says flower, right? You look at this, you put a sign on this. What's it called? Fred. Okay, you look at this immediately without even stopping. You put a sign, what? Cup or whatever. You know, that's right. Watch. Sign. Watch. Sign. You see, we can't stop. Right? So when we see things, hear things, smell things, right? Again, all the phenomena that appears to our senses, we immediately see the characteristics of it. I mean, this is not abnormal, right? This is what we do. Is that clear? People. We immediately, but again, when we put on characteristics, we don't stop just with the sign, right? We go, nice, not nice. Good, bad. Right? So we when we look at other people, we just don't see them and just put one name on them. We have lots of characteristics that we, what? Put on them. Lots and lots and lots and lots. Even when we look at ourselves, we have lots of characteristics that we label ourselves with. Is that clear? So again, even though phenomena is empty, even though this flower does not know it's a flower, this may be very interesting to people. You see, this flower does not know it's called a flower. If you came in here and said, hey, flower, it would not respond. It doesn't know it's called flower. It just thinks it's just what it is. Because this flower exists in signlessness. This flower exists in characterlessness. It just is what it is. Right? But we, through our capacity to label, think, conceptualize, we put all kinds of stuff onto everything. Is that true? Okay, it is non-stop. Right? And even when we're not in life, we can just be sitting. We will what? We will continue to think about life and just go over the good, bad, and different characters of everything. Okay? And yet, the door of liberation is the door of signlessness. What does that mean? To know that if I put a sign on Brian, right? Brian. And even if I put a label or I put good Brian, bad Brian, this is not Brian, that who Brian really is not the label. So why is this so dangerous? Why is this so liberating? Let's look at the other side. Let's just take relationships. Everybody here is in relationship to one degree or another, right? Family relationships, friendships, work relationships, societal relationships, neighbor relationships, right? do we really see without labeling, without characteristics? Are we really present to the person, even that we're talking with? Or is all our experiences with people filtering through our labels? Can we be with somebody without labeling them? Do we really know them, or do we just know the characteristics that we've imposed on them? You know, again, it's cartoonish. It's like we reduce life to being a one-dimensional cartoon. You know, anybody watch cartoons? I mean, if you've ever, and I have grandchildren, so I'm watching cartoons again. You know, they're entertaining, but they're one-dimensional, right? I mean, there's not a lot of depth to the cartoon characters. They're good, they're bad, they're brave, you know, they're this, right? They're very one-dimensional. But you know from being inside you, and everybody's inside themselves, there's a lot going on inside you, isn't there? Right? We are fairly complex beings. All kinds of thoughts. Good thoughts, bad thoughts, happy thoughts, unhappy thoughts, wholesome thoughts, unwholesome thoughts. Right? Impulses, desires, I mean, all kinds of stuff. We are complex, and yet our labeling is often simplistic. And we don't even know that in our encounter, even with people we live with, much less the world and the people of the world, we don't see them as they are. We see them just, well, first of all, we don't see that they're fundamentally empty. And to be empty is to understand, since every main thing is made of parts, is to understand impermanence, which is to understand that all the big shots in our society, they have all the same problem that everybody else has. What's that? They're all going to get sick and die, and they're all going to age. Why? Because they're impermanent. No matter how much money, no matter how much power, no matter how much influence they have, it's fundamentally meaningless in the big picture. That is the nature of things. So, when you understand the nature of emptiness, and when you understand the kind of the enter the door of signlessness, right? Am I willing to let go of just going by this and going, oh, flower? Am I going to stop and enter? Leave apart the signs, the words, the labels, the concept, and really enter this world by really being present to it. Am I willing to do that with the people I live with? Am I willing to do it with the people I encounter every day at work, in the community, and stop seeing everything through signs? The signs that we put on. Because fundamentally, as this teaching says, all phenomena have the nature of signlessness. Do you like it when people pigeonhole you? Anybody like to be pigeonholed? Anybody like to be told, you're a this, you're a this? Does that feel good? No. Do we like to be judged? No. And yet, you know, that's how we enter the world. Labeling everything, pigeonholing everybody. We have a name for everybody. You know, we have all these boxes and we put these people, these are in the good box. These people are in the bad box. These are in the like box. These are in the unlike box. These, you know, right? Everybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And we think it's true. And we don't realize, no, all these qualities, all these characteristics, all these boxes are our own creation. All phenomena are of the nature of signlessness in their nature. Doesn't mean you can't put a sign on the barbershop. It's helpful, right? It's helpful for the barber to get some business, right? It's helpful for somebody who's looking for a haircut. Oh, there's a barbershop, right? So functionally, it's good to have labels. But we can't forget that fundamentally we're putting the label on it. That inside that barbershop is what? A human being. And that human being is more than a barber. Right? That's a human being. And to encounter another human being as a human being directly means we have to let go of the signs. All the labels, names we put on everything. Now, so let's say we're a little intrigued by this idea of liberation, freedom. Freedom from sufferings, freedom from unhappiness, freedom from afflictive negative emotions, right? Let's say we want freedom, liberation, and we begin to go through these doors of emptiness and signlessness, right? Emptiness is the ground. Signlessness is the path we practice. What's the fruit? The fruition. They call it wishlessness. Desirelessness. Now, again, if there's anything that sounds un-American, it's this. It's like, I mean, is there anything else in life but desire and wanting things? I mean, isn't that the whole meaning of life, right? I mean, isn't that how we've been raised? Yes, I understand. So this is very un-American, to want the fruition being desirelessness, wishlessness. But this is profound. It doesn't mean that we don't, want things, but our wanting and our desire come from a deep realization, because we've been practicing emptiness of self, emptiness of thoughts, feelings, perceptions, emptiness phenomena. We've learned not to kind of always project labels onto everything. Where does that leave you? You see? It leaves you in the third door of liberation, right? Which is simply what? I can be happy, peaceful, content with things just as they are. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, happiness is always available to us in the moment. Most of us, we live with the idea what? Happiness, fulfillment, meaning is available to me when? In the future. Right? I got to get this. When I get all my ducks lined up, right? Then what? Then I'll be happy. Some people, not only is it about all these other things we do in life, I get the right job, the right money, the right boyfriend, the right girlfriend, the right wife, the right husband, the right kitchen, the right car, the right, boss. When I get all that, then what? Then I'll be happy. I'll have peace of mind. So it's always in the future. It's always out there. It's always predicated on getting something outside myself. But the fruition here is, you understand, you don't need anything to be happy. You already have all the conditions right now to be happy, content. You don't even need to become a good meditator. See? Many people go, I get that. So when I become a good meditator and really can focus on my breath, then I'll be happy. then I'll have peace of mind. You see, it's even when we enter a spiritual path, we're still doing the same thing, right? Wishing, hoping for things to change. But what if somebody told you it's not going to change? The mind you were dealing with this morning, remember that mind? What if I said to you, that's it? That's it? It's never going to change. What are you going to do? Oh. You have to go the other way, you see. What's the other way? Perhaps the nature of this mind itself is empty. Perhaps this person who's inside going, I don't like this mind I have. I want another mind. Maybe that's empty. You see? And what if I stop labeling myself and labeling my experience, good, bad, wanted, unwanted, signlessness? See, what if I just did all that? Would I still be unhappy with my life, with my mind, with my situation? Or could everything be the same way it is, but I've radically changed? How have I radically changed? I see things differently. I perceive myself in the world differently. I've entered the door of emptiness, right? The door of signlessness. And therefore, I can now enter the door of desirelessness. It doesn't mean, you know, if somebody says, which would you rather have, you don't go, oh, I'd rather, you know, but it's like, it's not a big deal. Because you know, I don't need that to be happy. Because everything, happiness is available right now. Peace of mind is available right now. So those are the kids come in when? 5 minutes. In 5 minutes. So any questions? Yes. I mean, you can challenge me or tell me this is the biggest bunch of nonsense you ever heard. That's fine. No, you don't. Okay.
So I listened to you give all the examples about emptiness. It's factors being in the air, atoms in the air, and so intellectually.
Just keep it brief so I can remember to repeat it. Okay. Good.
Intellectually, I get it all.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a subjective sense of that all your thoughts, feelings, perceptions, your body, everything is me.
One more second.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you.
So through meditation,
yeah,
is somehow this realization of emptiness going, I don't see how I'll ever really get it.
Okay. So the question is, because there are people live streaming. So the question is, hey, I understand everything you say, but my experience is that everything that's happening, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, life, it's happening to me. It's not happening to my daughters. It's happening to me. Right? I agree with you. That's the way it appears. Okay? We begin with accepting the way things appear. You're absolutely right. That way appears to all of us. Right? Right? If you're wearing purple shaded glasses, the world appears purple to you. I understand. Right? Right? If you have cataracts, I understand everything is blurry. I understand. Yeah, that's the way it appears to you. But that may not be how really things are. You see? And your sense is, can I really discover that for myself? Yes. That's what the practice of meditation on emptiness is all about, on signlessness. Yeah, there are the practices we do to discover that. Yeah, this is not just, you know, an interesting conversation on a Sunday morning. Yeah, this is the path. Yeah. And again, we begin with the appearances. Yeah, we all have this subjective feeling as me. You know, I go over there, hi, Brian. And there may be a few other Brians in here. And, you know, well, yeah, that's the way it appears. But the way it appears may not be, and the way I see things may not be clear. Right? Anybody ever been psychotic or dealt with a psychotic? Or, you know, somebody's hallucinating? How does the world appear to them? Or anybody who's delusional, right? How does the world appear to them? They think their delusions and their illusions and hallucinations are real, right? Try to talk them out of it. Can't talk them out of it, right? Sound familiar to some of us? Yeah. So this is a we're not denying how things appear and how we experience it, which is saying it may not be how things really are. We don't deny that this looks like a solid, real, permanent flower. But when we take it apart, we cannot find anything called a flower, right? Paul, when we take you apart, when we do an autopsy of you, we will not, right? And we can do a very minute autopsy. Right? And we can, you know, however the brain scientists and the car, you know, can hook you up to endless kind of things. They won't find Paul. Will they? Paul. Will they find a little thing in there called Paul in your body or mind? Not to your knowledge. What does that tell you then about Paul? Is he a real self-existent thing? Well, you know, I used to be a mental health professional, Paul. I tell you, you know. People who held to their beliefs in the face of reality, we call those deluded people. Right? Yeah. But that's what the enlightened ones call all of us. We're deluded. But luckily, they showed us a path, you know, the same way, hopefully, people who are psychotic and delusional can go through a process of treatment that they can, what? Come back to reality. Right? The Buddhist path, or in other spiritual paths that follow this way, are ways of helping us come out of our delusions, our illusions, our hallucinations, and get real. All phenomena, this is scientific, all phenomena have the nature of emptiness, right? It's subject to experimentation. Experiment. See if that's true. You look for Paul. You do a complete imaginary physical autopsy on Paul and see if you can find him anywhere. And then do an autopsy on your mind. Thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories. Can you find some solid, permanent thing called Paul? You know? Email me. Okay? So we'll stop for today. Thank you.